Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Having a return guest, and she's been on for a different subject, different book. And today we're going to be talking about her newer book called Proof of Life. And we have visiting Sheila Lowe. Thank you for being here, Sheila.
Oh, thank you, Al. I'm happy to be here.
So, Sheila, now did now this? Let's get into to you a little bit. What made you write a book like this? This is more in the paranormal field. So, did you have some sort of experiences when you were younger, or did you have experiences that influenced you enough to write something like this?
I did, and before I talk about that, though, I shall say my first series is the Forensic Handwriting Mysteries, because I'm a forensic handwriting examiner, so this is a very different way to go. Now, my character, Claudia Rose, from the Forensic series, appears in this book because she and this character met in an earlier book. After I wrote my first four in the Forensic series, I wrote what I thought was going to be a standalone called What She Saw. And this is about a young woman who wakes up on a train pulling into the station here in Ventura, where I live now. And she realizes that she doesn't know who she is or where she's going or where she's come from. And so that book is the story of what happened to her. And, lots of things happen. So a couple of years ago, I realized I needed to write this new book, Proof of Life. Okay, so now I'm going to go back 19 years. No, I'll go back further than that. I grew up in a very fundamentalist religion, and anything paranormal was strictly forbidden because, in their view, if you talk to spirits, you've got the demons. In fact, my mother doesn't speak to me anymore. Because of the religion, because now I'm interested in the paranormal. But
so
what happened?
So I was going to say, so they really think that when you have a paranormal experience, or you are dealing with, you know, ghosts or anything like that, that you're really kind of dealing with the devil or some demon or something like that.
Yeah. That's exactly what they believe. And in fact, they tell you meditation is bad because if you empty your mind, the demons are going to come in and fill it up. And, you know, The fourth book I wrote in my forensic series is called Last Rites, and it's about a religious cult that's very much like that one, because I now see it as a cult.
Right.
And where did you grow up, and what religion was it, Sheila?
Well, I'm from England, but yeah. I know I don't sound like anymore, because I've been here for more than 50 years in California. I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, okay.
When I was 35, they kicked me out and said I was clearly a danger to the congregation, which I now wear as a badge of honor.
Well, yeah, it's a diverse belief.
Yes. Yeah, very different beliefs now, and I'm so glad.
Well, what do they do as Jehovah Witnesses? So if you are in a situation where something paranormal happens to you, you know, let's say you hear voices or you see a ghost or something goes on to you, what are you supposed to do then as a Jehovah Witness? Are you, like, if you're not allowed to pursue it further, or if it's supposed to be a demon, what's the answer there?
You're supposed to figure out what you've got in your house that's attracting it and get rid of that. That happened to my mother on more than one occasion. And one night she was living with another woman, you know, renting a room from her, and she woke up in the night and heard this knocking on some planks of wood that were laid in the room. And she called her friend in, and they both heard this knocking and so on. And she realized that day she had brought in an old Catholic Bible that somebody had gotten from a thrift store. And so they decided it must be that, and they looked through it, and they found some notations in there that said that basically that doing the, you know, paranormal things was good. And so they took it outside to put it in the barbecue, and they claimed it wouldn't burn.
Oh.
So I'm sure they must have got rid of it some other way. But they're terrified of things like that.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So now how did this affect you as you were growing up? And you said you were gone at 35 then in the church. How did it affect how you dealt with things like when the paranormal happened and stuff like that?
I was curious about it. I'm a Scorpio, and supposedly, you know, we like the deeper, darker things. One day I brought home a book from the library called The Hand of Mary Constable by Paul Gallico, and it had this disembodied hand floating around on the cover. Well, that night, my little brother, I was 16 at the time, and my little brother woke up and apparently saw something dark and a shadow by his bed. He wasn't afraid, but he called our mother, and of course she freaked out, and she decided it must be this book that I'd brought home, and she threw it out the back door, and I had to take it back to the library the next day. But I was always curious about it. I just didn't do anything for a long, long time.
So what kind of experience did you end up having that made you get into writing this series?
My daughter was murdered, and I needed to know what happened to her after that. She was killed by her boyfriend, who was a federal agent, and he also killed himself. Excuse me. This was in 2000, and when she first met him in 1999, she did what anyone whose mother is a handwriting analyst would do, and she brought me his handwriting, and we talked about it, and he wanted to know what it said about him, and there were some disturbing red flags for pathology. So I talked to him about the fact that he had this strong need to be in control, and that Jennifer would not be controlled. Trust me, I had plenty of problems when she was growing up, and she made a lot of bad choices. But by now, she was 26, and so obviously she was making her own decisions. And despite all of the negative things that we talked about, he moved in with her. And, you know, it was really difficult, right, almost from the outset. And eventually they both drank a lot, and he had stress on the job, and there was stress at home. And one thing I found in his handwriting that I asked him about were signs of a head injury. And handwriting can show a lot of physiological issues. So I said, did you have a head injury? And he said, yes, I was hit in the head so hard I was almost blinded. And he was getting treatments for terrible headaches. So there was this physiological component as well. And I saw this as an explosion waiting to happen. There were signs of potential for violence in the handwriting. And so on this one, she complained about him in, I think it was in December, to his supervisors. And they told, sorry, got a little frog today. His supervisors told him that they should split up, but they never followed through. 2 months later, she had called me, and they were both always calling me to complain about each other. And finally, she was going to leave him and come and stay with me. That was on a Friday. Friday night, I was out to dinner with my then husband, and she called on the cell phone and asked me to do something. And I said, sure, but I'm out to dinner right now. Can we talk tomorrow? And she said, yeah, okay. Well, the next morning, I got a phone call from an Orange County sheriff's investigator who said, I'm sorry to tell you, your daughter's been murdered. Just like that. And so I knew immediately what had happened. And I had to know what the truth was about life after Earth, if there was life after Earth. And that was where I began my investigation.
And sometimes it takes such a tragic thing, because for us to start to explore what is beyond, what does this life mean to us and to the bigger picture, doesn't it? So in terms of, that's a horrific, almost horrific way to have an awakening about your spiritual beliefs, Sheila. How did you go about investigating the almost 1,001 different beliefs that are out there and then landing with your own set of beliefs?
I'm trying to remember. I started reading books about it and talking to friends who, I had been getting psychic readings ever since I'd been kicked out of the religion. So for a long time, I was sort of going in that direction. And I heard about a particular psychic medium in my area, and I don't remember how I found out about her. But I had a reading on the phone that went on for something like 3 hours. It was just unbelievable. And the things that she said were just, I'm going to backtrack on that. That happened, but later. I had gone to a psychic medium named Brian Hurst in a group and was very impressed with him. So I had a reading with him very soon after her death. And so that sort of opened the way. And I had many readings after that. I went to, you've heard of John Edward, of course, who is very well known and has had TV shows. And before his show started, I'd heard that he was going to be in the area. I'd never heard of him. My sister-in-law said, you need to go and hear this guy. And he picked me out of about 1,000 people. He said, he had come in late, and he said, to the audience, I'm going to tell you about my process, but then a little later I'll start bringing through some people. And he said, oh, no, wait a minute. There's somebody rushing to the front of the line that wants to be heard right now. And he pointed in my direction. I was way in the back. He said, there's in the back, on the right side, there's gunshots. It's a murder. And I didn't say anything, but somebody a few rows behind me stood up and said, it's my son. And John said, no, it's a daughter. And so I stood up, and he started, talking about how it happened in February, and two passed at the same time, and she knew who shot her, and a lot of other things that were just stunning and phenomenal. So I've had many experiences like that. James Van Prague came to my house and taped his TV show. And I know that it was my daughter, Jennifer, who was arranging these things.
I've interviewed James Vanpera, and he's a lovely, lovely guy. And
yes.
I've been told I read in a very similar way to John Edwards. So interesting that those two individuals have been so important to you. So in terms of the style of readings that they were able to give you, that validated so much of the information for you, was there any point after that that you were still testing that information and the belief, or was that enough and you just thought, right, absolutely, I know this is my daughter, I absolutely know that this is my belief, and then that led you to then, which was for your first kind of book?
I because the information was so personal and so specific, I accepted it right away. But in addition to that, I was having some experiences of her. I saw her cross the kitchen door one day. I was soon right after she was killed. I mean, you know, within a day or so, I was getting calls on my landline and my cell phone where I would hear a lot of static. And I could hear a very distant voice, but I couldn't tell what it was saying. And the radio going up and songs coming on that were important and things like that. So I was really ready to accept it. And I started meditating daily and was getting some good results. But that at that time, my very first book, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Handwriting Analysis, had come out. And I went on a book tour I went to about 10 states over a year, and I just kept going and doing a lot of things. And finally, when I stopped, I got very sick. I got mono because, you know, I just really hadn't dealt with things. And after that, I had trouble meditating for a very long time. But, you know, I've always now accepted and believe that there is life after Earth and that the people we love are very much involved in our continuing lives.
Sheila, I hope you don't mind me asking, but you haven't mentioned your partner, husband, or you, the father of your daughter.
No.
And whether his beliefs were the same as yours, and whether he also sought that comfort.
No, her father was my first husband, and he is still he's still a Jehovah's Witness. So, he deals with it in his own way. But the husband that I was married to at that time, he's an engineer, and he sort of tolerated it, but we're not together anymore.
As people do when they don't have to and share the same beliefs.
Right.
So this experience, how, you know, incredibly traumatic and painful, but then led you to a new chapter. So it's almost as like your daughter is leading you into this new vocation.
Yes.
As an author. And but before we go into that bit, there's one thing that interests me about the handwriting and the analysis of that. Was there part of you that didn't want to continue it because you'd almost like a medium, you had read the warning signs, hadn't you, for your daughter and her relationship? So was there a little bit that just thought, well, I've got this gift, I can do this with the handwriting, and yet it hasn't been able to prevent the greatest of tragedy in my life?
No.
Nothing about you that thought maybe you would rather not have known?
No, not at all. I had come to recognize that there was really nothing that I could do for Jennifer. She created a very difficult life for herself. And she's come through many, every time she comes through in a reading, she always apologizes for how difficult she was.
Yeah,
I make a living as a handwriting analyst and a question document examiner. And so, you know, there's no question of me not wanting to do that. I'm happy that I can help other people to understand, you know, what's going on in their lives and their loved ones' lives, and also the document examination part.
I think, forgive me, I certainly don't want to, you'd think that question was about could you have prevented it, because I don't believe that would have been the case. But I suppose I'm intrigued because as a medium, if things happen to my own family and friends and my children who I may have had some sort of glimmer about something not being quite right, and then not get the information or understand it or prevent something happening. You know, sometimes I have been frustrated and thought, why didn't I know that? Why didn't I do more? Why didn't I? So I don't question the belief, but I sometimes I question my own perception of it, I suppose. And you know, you beat yourself up sometimes when you, you know, emotionally, when you can't intervene the way you would like to. But then that's not fate either. So.
Yeah. No, I never thought of it that way. I mean, there's plenty of other things that I wish I'd done differently in her growing up. But I know that we all have our own journey, and she chose her path. I did the best I could.
Absolutely, as we do, and you know, understandably and rightly so. You know, you've identified that our young people, our children, our young people who then grow into adults, they find their own path and they do make their own choices. So in terms of, let's think about this next chapter that in some ways your daughter's paved for you, which is absolutely fantastic. She's given you a new venture, the author, the creativity. Tell me a little bit about how you then thought, do you know what, this is perfect, this is now what I'm going to do, and found yourself with this amazing ability to make characters jump out of a book.
Yeah, well, I've always wanted to write, you know, I've always written. And I used to write back in the day, my stories were about the Beatles, and I was married to Ringo. So, I've always wanted to write. But I wrote my several nonfiction books first, still wanting to write fiction. And then, of course, I did my forensic handwriting mysteries. But at the end of 2016, the man that I was seeing died very suddenly of a heart attack. And so that sort of brought all this back again. I'd always thought that I would write a book about Jennifer, and I had a title for it, you know, sort of her biography. But it, when I got down to it, I never really could do it. It was too painful. So then it occurred to me after my boyfriend died, I started thinking about writing a fiction book about what I know about the afterlife. And so I started thinking of a story, and it suddenly occurred to me that the book that I had written, the standalone about the girl with amnesia, that she needed to be the protagonist of the new book. Her name is Jessica. And as I was going on, then I thought, oh, the seventh book in the forensic series has a character named Sage. And I thought he would be the perfect love interest for Jessica. So I started working on this story. And the title, Proof of Life, it's sort of a double entendre, because, you know, when somebody's kidnapped, they might have you hold up a newspaper with the date on it so that you can prove that they're alive on that day. Mm-hmm. So there's proof of life. So it's a story about a kidnapping of a little boy. And as I started outlining it, I was, you know, I frequently go to mediums.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information, information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Just because I'm a medium junkie, you know, and I enjoy it. And I was told by several that Jennifer was working with me on the book, that she would be not exactly channeling it through me. It's not that easy. Mm-hmm. But that she would help me with it. And
that's in terms of your research, what is your view? And without giving the plot or particular points of your book away, what was your belief in terms of the afterlife? Because even as a medium for very many, well, since I was born, I still hear so many different accounts of what afterlife is, depending on who you are and where you've trained or your experiences.
Yeah, well, I have been to the Afterlife Research Education Institute symposiums a couple of times. And, I've talked to many people in the field. And because there are so many beliefs, I'm open to what it, you know, to what it may be. But what I like the best is what a medium, Tracy Bolton, who's now a good friend of mine, she said that what she's shown is that it's just like walking into another room. So you close your eyes here and you open them and you're just in another place that's quite similar to here, but better. And I really like that. I've read quite a lot. I like Michael Newton's book, Journey of Souls, which is about life between lives. And that resonated with me a lot more than even the Bible, you know, which I studied for so long.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? So many different accounts. And then when you, I suppose the more I speak to people about it, and then we look at the complexities of science and parallel universes and how reincarnation fits in there, and it's so complex, and we all have to form our own view of what this better life looks like, and of course it's not too dissimilar to Jehovah's in some way, Jehovah Witnesses, because they will say there is this life that's much better, that's free of everything, and the lion walks with man, and all of those things. I understand some of the religion.
Yeah, but that's after everybody on the earth has been killed.
Right. Absolutely, yes. After the mass murder, a few are resurrected, and life is okay. But until that point, you are almost your dust until you're resurrected. In terms of the spirituality side of things, certainly I haven't come across the conflict with the spiritual side of things with the religion purely because I haven't looked into it in that much detail. But it's interesting how we still have so many very strong feelings out there in terms of what it means to be spiritual and what a belief is if you're spiritual. So does it mean you're at one with the earth and you're kind of almost a naturalist? or does it, or a pagan, or does it mean that you have a unique set of views that means you feel more attuned and live your life happily in the way you want to? Or does it mean you have a spirit guide and you are a believer of life after death and communication with those that have passed over? It always fascinates me the different analogies to what the word spiritualism means.
Mm-hmm. I think it's all those things.
Yeah, all rolled into one. So so in terms of your book, what would be probably the most emotive part of writing the book for you? So the one bit that really resonated, the one piece of learning, I don't know, just the most important part to you of writing the book?
I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I'm not sure I understand the question.
So when writing the book, you will have gone through your own journey, because as you said, there will be some parts of the book that you're building characters and you're taking them through with your understanding of the afterlife, but there will also be parts of your own life and learning that come through and are triggered as part of your writing. So emotionally, you might resonate with particular parts of the book more.
I don't know. You know, I put so much of myself into every word because every single word counts. Maybe, in the opening, I've never had an out-of-body experience. One of my sons has had numerous. I have not. But the prologue of the book goes back before the first book to the what you could call the inciting incident, where Jessica has a near-death experience. She actually dies in a car crash, and meets an angel. So, you know, just even from the very first page, this book was very special to me for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And there were questions. You know, there was something, let's see, how can I say this without giving away anything, sort of something that happens to Jessica in the book, and I never explained it. And when I turned the book in, my publisher said, well, you know, whatever happened about that? And I thought, oh, yeah, I guess I'm going to have to resolve that. So I asked Jennifer, you know, what should I do with this? How can I make it make sense? And the answer just sort of came to me, and it was perfect. And that happened in a couple of different places, too. It was just great.
And subsequently to writing the book and the success and the more you talk about the book, do you hear from Jessica Moore through this experience, or
Jennifer? Jessica's the character.
Apologies.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I know she's around, and even just last week I had a reading with Suzanne Giesman, who is a very well-known medium here, and I analyzed her handwriting for her. We exchanged, and she said that Jennifer really enjoys doing this work with me, and that she's going to work with me on the next book. There will be another one in the series. So she's around. She's here. She makes herself known.
And do you recognize those the signs that she gives to you, or do you think sometimes, because the reason I'm asking is actually because so many people read into things to be signs that aren't signs.
Right.
So how do you feel reassured that it's actually her?
Yeah, I'm a big skeptic. It takes a lot to convince me.
Mm-hmm.
But I have noticed over the past year or so, as I tried to get back into meditating, that sometimes as I'm going into a meditative state, there's like a little tingling on top of my head, like my hair is being ruffled, a sort of electrical feeling. And then that has happened as I sit at the computer sometimes. And I feel, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel that that is her sign. Well, I'll tell you an instance. Last year I asked her, would you give me a sign that you're still around? And a couple of days went by, and I went to a networking meeting that I go to. And on the back table, we can put our wares out there, like I'll put my books. And this new member had put some little wooden signs that she made, and one of them said, Mermaid Crossing. Well, Jessica, now I'm doing it, Jennifer, was a big fan of mermaids. And I said, oh, I've got to get that. So when I got it home, I was thinking, oh, it's a sign. It's an actual sign she sent me. And then I thought, mermaids, yeah, that's her. And Mermaid Crossing, and she's crossed. So that's a sign. That's really great. Well, I sent an email to the woman who made the sign, and I told her this. I thought she'd enjoy hearing it. And she wrote back, and she said, I'm getting goosebumps because I was sitting in the car getting ready to go to the meeting, and I remembered I wasn't wearing my earrings that I wanted to take. So I went back in the house, and on the way back out, past the table where she'd been working that afternoon, and decided to take that sign with her.
Wow.
So to me, that was a pretty good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you ever thought about, I know we're deviating from the book here a little bit, but it's fascinating talking to you and about your journey. So have you ever thought about, because clearly you've gone through a lot of mediums, developing the gift yourself?
I thought for a while that was going to happen, and I've taken a couple of courses. Then it just kind of stopped, and I think about a little over a year, well, almost a year and a half ago now, where I live, there was an immense fire, the Thomas Fire, mm-hmm. and 1,000 homes burned in my community. It was then the largest fire in California history, and after that, I just have had a real trouble getting back into doing the meditation, doing the things that you need. I've been told by a couple of mediums that it was like a psychic PTSD sort of thing. So I have to work through it. But, and I host through the AREI, the Afterlife Research Education Institute, a bi-monthly online meeting for automatic writing, because I thought, you know, automatic writing be a natural for me.
Yeah.
But I haven't been able to achieve it. But I'm working, you know, with these other members, friends, on that. So I don't know. I don't know whether I'm supposed to be a medium or not.
Do you think, how has it helped you visiting lots of different mediums? Because I know that I always give advice, if you find somebody that you absolutely connect with and that person validates information for you like no other, then stick with the one person, because how we perceive information and how we get information, it can feel quite different because it's about our interpretation. So how do you find visiting lots of different mediums? Do you think it's helpful, or do you think you're still seeking a particular style of mediumship?
No, I'm just curious, and I still do go back to the ones that I've resonated with.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, when I have opportunities, it's not like I'm going from one to the other. I'm not looking for anything, because they always, you use the word that I always use, they validate my beliefs.
Yeah. So that's a very John Edwards thing, the validation.
Oh, yes.
So certainly when I was, when I developed my mediumship, I know that mine is about validation rather than prediction. And whilst there is, there's an element of prediction in there, it's definitely stronger on the validation side of things. And that's, for me, what I think is the purpose of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of your book and all the different characters, who inspires the characters? Where do they come from?
That's as far as... Well, one of them is based on, a minor character is based on the man that I was seeing that died. I'm trying to think back to where Jessica came from. She's probably a big part of Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
And Sage is just somebody, he's sort of an ideal man that I have in mind. He's not a perfect guy, of course. But he's very accepting, and people really, I've been getting lots of emails, people saying, I really love Sage. So he wasn't based on anybody particular, just an ideal. And Claudia, who is my handwriting analyst, she's not me, but she does the kind of work that I do. She's a lot braver than me. So, you know, they're just made up people, but they've become really real.
Is there anything you would change about the book?
No, I don't think so. I worked really hard on it, and it's what I want. It's what I want it to be. The thing that I really would like is if reading the story can help people who are not quite sure and help them to see. There, because I talked, I passed it by a number of really good mediums who said, yes, this is very realistic. This is exactly like I experience it. Like, for instance, there's a scene with a seance, and I sent that to Wendy Zammit, who victorzammit.com is a huge resource for paranormal things. Her husband is a retired attorney who researched into the afterlife. And Wendy read the scene, and she said, oh, yeah, this is okay, but this is really how it should be done. And so I rewrote it. And people are always telling me, who have been to seances, yeah, this is exactly how I experience it.
And in terms of the, is there an underpinning learning that comes from your book that you want people to take with you? So I know that one is the reassurance and belief that there is more to life than we know it here on this earth level. But what about, is there any other underpinning message?
Not message per se, but I think it's information put into a palatable way. It's like with my other series, people are always saying to me, oh, I learned a lot about handwriting from this book, but, you know, not being preached to or not like it's a lesson. But seeing it in a practical way can help people to recognize and understand the things that they, you know, maybe something's happened to them and they think, oh, was that a sign, or was that my loved one, and we're not sure, and can help them to better recognize those things.
I think one of the things that I always say to people is, and it really frustrates me big time, is when we see a million and one pictures of the bird, the robin, all over Facebook, and suddenly it's everybody's dead relative, or a butterfly or a dragonfly, and it makes me chuckle to think how powerful the social media is. And how absolutely mad it is to think that every single person that's passed comes back as a robin and sits in your garden, and it just tickles me, really. But you're absolutely right. A sign from somebody has to have validation. It has to be meaningful. It cannot be something that somebody else says, well, if this happens, then this is a sign. Well, that's not real. Because it will be something that completely resonates with you as an individual, and only with you.
Exactly. And like my mermaid sign, that was
absolutely,
very meaningful.
Yeah,
and you know, maybe a bird or a butterfly or something, maybe that has real meaning to somebody, and it really is a sign. It's just not everybody's sign.
No. And when we see all those pictures and say, oh, yeah, this is so-and-so, but it isn't, is it? It can't be. It can't be everybody's Uncle Fred. It's just not possible.
No.
But it's about making sure that there is that validation. Al, what do you make of all this? Because you're kind of a believer, but also very skeptical.
Yeah, I always go through the middle. No, I think it's great. I think it's just expanding on our own life. I think that's, you know, what life is. Sheila, where do you get your inspiration in writing? Like, do you read other writers, or do you have favorites?
Oh, I do, and I'm not very well read, I'm afraid. I have a fairly limited circle, and they're mostly mystery writers. John Sanford is my very favorite. Michael Connelly, Tess Gerritsen, Deborah Crombie. I read critically. Or I try to. You know, the thing about a good book is when you're reading it and trying to analyze it and think, you know, what is it that I like about this? And then you forget to do that because it's so good, it draws you in. So that's what I aspire to do.
That's interesting, yeah. Have you ever thought about going to haunted places or old buildings or getting into ghost hunts?
I think I'm too chicken for that. I probably still have a little bit of that Jehovah's Witness in the back of my head.
Yeah.
I know some ghost hunters, and they're not demon-possessed, so maybe one day.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just, it's funny how that religions can believe that and not want to explore it, be scared of it, you know?
Yes.
You know? So do you have a website or anything like that for people, or do you just sell books and not have any social... No, I mean, some people have social media and some don't. Like, are you out there? Or?
I do. I actually have two websites, one for handwriting analysis, which is just my name, SheilaLowe.com, SheilaLowe, because everybody misspells Sheila.
Yeah.
And the one for the books is ClaudiaRoseSeries.com.
Fantastic. Do you plan on doing quite a few books in this series?
You know, I didn't know. Just like in the first series, I wrote a book. I didn't know it was going to become a series. But now that having made What She Saw, the prequel to this book, I have to at least write one more. And I have a title. So I'm going to be going to England in the fall, and I'm looking for a story there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to have a reading with you.
There you go, you see.
Always welcome.
Yeah. Do events happen in your life that make you go further into a book series like this? Like, will something happen while you're writing, let's say, Proof of Life or just after it, and that kind of lead you to doing another book?
Probably. I mean, in the first series, which I always go back to because that's where I have most experience, most of them are based on a kernel of truth. Like I said, the fourth book, Last Rites, is about a religious cult, and so obviously that had a lot of truth in it. I do collect experiences that I might be able to use. They're all fodder, you know.
Right. Wow, what an interesting book and subject. Mm-hmm. And, of course, your book's sold at all bookstores and Amazon, I would imagine.
Yeah, the bookstores may or may not carry it, but they can certainly all order it. I was at Barnes & Noble here in Ventura last Saturday. They had all the books, but you can ask them to order it if they don't have it.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, we'll have that link up on our site as well, so listeners can just do one click and pick up the book while they're listening. Very, very good interview. Thank you very much for bringing us the book and letting us know. Proof of Life, and that's by Sheila Lowe. Thank you for being on the show, Sheila.
Thank you for having me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.